when you look at the definition of abundance and gratitude in the dictionary, I saw David's picture was next to both of those words. And so it is amazing to me how mindset and how you have not only fixed your mindset, David, but you've helped, I don't know if it's hundreds of thousands, millions, it could be beyond that, tens of millions of people change their mindset. And I think for the folks that don't know you, I'd love to just start, because although a lot of people know you, there are a few people that don't know your story. They just see where you are right now. And I'd love to hear a little bit of kind of how, where you started and where you are right now, but more importantly, where you're taking your business and your vision across the world.
Well, first, absolutely would love to thank both of you, Mark and Lisa, for changing my life. I'm not going to get too emotional, but very rarely in my journey have I met two people that are meant for each other, but have such great impact. And your generosity and kindness to me and my family and to my extended family, my community, has been unparalleled. And to be able to be on this podcast is absolutely an honor. To be able to be at your wedding was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And so before I got into my journey, I would be amiss if I didn't thank you from me and my family for everything you do for us and our community. But this stems from...
By the way, and you're not even our favorite melter. You're like number four on our list, you know.
I'm nobody's favorite melter. That's a given.
I was just going to say, excuse me, what about Julie?
Yeah, that's fair enough. I am nobody's favorite melter. That just tells you how lucky I am. But I come from three different worlds. And I think that's the best way to describe where I come from. And just for facts, majority of the people on earth don't know who I am, about 7.6 billion people. But I'm just blessed for those who do know who I am. I'm very blessed to have those people in my life. So the more people I can have join us in our neighborhood, our frequency is why I do these interviews and why I spend the majority of my life being of service and of value, like the Murphys as well. But I was born in a life of service. My name, actually, my mom intentionally named me David Meltzer. David means beloved. Meltzer means servant. And my mom used to always say, live up to your name. All the time when I was young, when I wasn't living up to my name, my mom would say, remember, son, you need to live up to your name. I was intentional of why I named you this name. But I grew up in a world of not enough. And many of us grow up in this world of not enough where everything happens to us. My dad left when I was five. But in this world of not enough, I had a mom of more than enough. She raised six kids on her own. She worked two jobs. She was a second grade teacher, making about $17,000 a year. She would pack all six of our dinners in a paper bag, shove us into a country squire station wagon in Akron, Ohio, and drive us around while she filled up greeting card turnstiles at convenience stores so that we could have enough money to survive. Now, my mom wasn't great at receiving. People offered her help, but she refused. And she empowered us all to have a desire that we must be what we can be. And part of that acknowledgement was education. So I joke around all the time that my mom was a third degree black belt in the martial arts. Not the ones you think of. It was called Jewish guilt. So we could not get a B. She would guilt us into the fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. Doctor, if I heard this one more time, doctor, lawyer, or failure. Every time I came up with a cockamamie idea how I was going to be rich to buy my mom a house, it would be David, doctor, lawyer, or failure. That's how you're going to be rich. And I wanted to buy my mom a house and a car. I wanted to take away the only struggle in my life, which was financial, which is why it's such a blessing to have Mark in my life, because he keeps those financial stresses in place for so many people in my community and me. But for me, I just wanted to be rich. I did not have this mindset of abundance. I actually lived in scarcity. I was hyper-competitive. I thought I was in control of my life and I would make it happen on my own. And unfortunately and fortunately, when I graduated law school, I made my first $1 million 9 months out of law school, not listening to my mom's advice, by the way. I had been offered a job as a lawyer And I also was offered a job as an entrepreneur selling legal research online. So I worked for West Publishing, the world's biggest legal publisher. And I made my first $1 million, which got me from a world of not enough, where everything was happening to me, to a misunderstanding of abundance, what I call the world of just enough for me. I used to tell, everything happens for me, Mom. Everything happens for me. Everything's a trade or a negotiation, a competition. And I was constantly in struggle trying to make more money. And 3 years out of law school, I had my first exit with West Publishing, $3.4 billion, which changed my economic status and allowed me to do what I wanted. And I pursued the technology that I was first introduced to up in the Silicon Valley. And I learned to raise money and become a young CEO, a fashionable CEO. And by 1999, you would have thought, Lisa especially, I had a perfect life. I married my dream girl, Julie, from the fourth grade, who hated me till I was about 26 or 27. But I'm very persistent and consistent asking. But you know, in 1999, I was running Samsung's phone division, multimillionaire, worth over $100 million in my early 30s, 31 years old. And that was probably the emptiest and loneliest I ever felt, because I lost all of my desire to be what I must be. I just entitled myself and I didn't live in the humility that my mom taught me to live in. And fortunately, I married the right woman. As I left technology and moved, was hired. A lot of people ask me, I ran the most notable sports agency in the world. They made the movie Jerry Maguire about our firm. Lee Steinberg hired me, not because I was a great lawyer, not because I was a great sports agent. He actually hired me because I was the only one who had a sports backdrop to technology and venture capital. And he was such a visionary. We saw the future of sports, not in sports agency, but in venture capital and technology. And that's how I got my dream job, which was a dream for everyone else. It was a nightmare for me, because not only was I worth over $100 million, but now I had access to what billionaires couldn't afford to have access to. Sidelines and locker rooms and the master's cabin. I was so full of myself. And finally, that world of for me turned into a disaster. I lost everything except for, thank goodness, my life and my wife. And without my wife, I probably would have lost my life, which led me into the world today of more than enough of everything for everyone. 18 years in recovery of being able to live in abundance from the lessons I learned from living a life of scarcity and one of competition as well. So I'm just blessed to be here today to share that abundance story and how I got there and what lessons I learned.
David, in hearing that, I think it's people probably thought, you know, here you have this $100 million enterprise and you lost it and you recovered. And I feel that what most people never hear, because of social media and because there's a major motion picture really designed around your life and you're this celebrity in this world, they don't see the other side. It couldn't have been like, oh, I lost $100 million. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to do it again. What did that time feel like? Like the wall kicking moments, and there had to be, and maybe there wasn't for you, but I can't imagine all of us cutting our finger and all bleeding red, that you didn't feel like, this just freaking sucks. Like, this is so hard. I am never going to be able to do this again. Maybe you didn't, but I've worked with you as a coachee, and one of the most valuable lessons I got was the abundant mindset and the ability to self-talk in a way in which it propels movement. But I don't think that was immediate. And I know that that was a process. I know there are a lot of people struggling right now. I know that there were 30,000 plus layoffs in Google today. I know that there is massive upheaval in the world. And there are people out there that we are going to help that feel so incredibly hopeless and helpless because of your triumph. So can you speak about the dark moments for a second?
Yeah, you know, just like the good moments, dark moments happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. And so the all of a sudden in my life wasn't exactly what most people perceive it to be, meaning the day that I had to claim bankruptcy and lost over $100 million. Let me go back a little bit into things were happening very slowly. And I'll go back to 6 years before a defining moment, which was when I was 30 years old and my father finally came back into my life with a birthday present after not giving me a birthday present since my 10th birthday when he forgot it. He bought me a jacket and I was in bliss when I received a gift from my dad because it had been 20 years. And I got this sport coat and I immediately put it on and I was in tears. And Julie was there, my wife, and she's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Oh my gosh, my dad actually remembered my birthday. Oh my gosh, he wants to have a relationship with me. He gets it." And I open up my jacket and I look in to see if it says especially made for my son because it fit perfectly. Or maybe Armani, I didn't know, but he had torn out all the pockets in my jacket. And I went from complete bliss back into anger and scarcity. And I called him and I said, "Dad, I got your gift." And he said, "Oh, thank goodness. What do you think?" I'm like, "Well, I can't wear it. Why would you give me a jacket I can't wear?" He goes, "Oh no, it's not for wearing. I want you to hang it in your closet to remind yourself you can't take anything, son, with you when you're gone. You're just like me, son. I wanted you to know that money will not buy you everything." And I was so lost at 30 years old. I literally attacked him and said, "Dad, I'm nothing like you. You're a liar. You're a cheater, a manipulator, an overseller. F you." And I hung up. 6 years after that, I was running Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment. And my best friend, Rob, he's actually the guy at sixth grade camp because I was too afraid to ask Julie to go steady. He actually asked me for me to go steady. And he embarrassed me when she said, "No, tell him to ask me himself." And so I asked Rob, while I was running Lee Steinberg, "Would you like to go to the Masters with me, go backstage, the cabins with Curtis Strange? We were flying net jets, Warren Moon. We had Wayne Gretzky, Joe Montana." And my best friend, since the fourth grade, tells me no. I said, "Rob, what do you mean you don't want to go? You love golf. This is a dream. I'll pay for everything." He said, "I don't care what you pay for." He goes, "I don't like what you're doing and who you're hanging out with." And I looked at him and I'm like, "Rob," I go, "I'm not doing anything. I'm not like those guys." And he said, "Dave, you can lie to me, but stop lying to yourself. You're going to end up dead." And of course, I wasn't ready to hear that from my best friend either. So I told him, "F you, Rob. How ungrateful could you be? I never want to talk to you again." And he said, "Fine." I left there crying. 2 weeks later is really what you were asking about when my life would change. It was the happened all of a sudden moment after things happening very slowly. I asked Julie, my wife, if I could go to the Grammy Awards with a client of mine. He was a rapper named Little John. He's pretty famous now. And John was up for a Grammy Award. Julie said, "I don't think you should go. You're not paying attention to the family, to your business, and you're partying way too much. This is probably not a good idea. We really need to talk." Well, I lied to her, told her I had a business meeting, and I went to the Grammy Awards, came home at 5:30 in the morning, a complete wasted wreck, and there she was waiting for me in my Rancho Santa Fe dream home with my dream cars, my dream life. She was waiting there, and she was in tears, and she said, "Sorry." She said, "I'm not happy, and I'm going to leave you. I can't stay. We got three girls who you all know. they were all below 10 years old. And she said, I can't stay. You're going to end up dead. And I want you to take stock in who you were and what you want to become, because that's the only thing that will save your life. I can't do it. I wasn't ready for her to say that. I told her, are you kidding me? I remember walking in a circle with my arms to the sides. Who do you think did all of this? How dare you? How you want to leave? F you. The door is right there. Don't let it hit you on the way out. I went to bed, woke up in the morning full of hate. I hated my mom because she told me I was lost. I hated my dad because he told me money doesn't buy everything. I hated my friend Rob because he told me I wasn't doing the right things with the right people. And now I hated my wife because she told me the truth. And as I sat there hating the only four people in my life that cared about me and told me the truth, ironically, I looked in my closet and there was that damn jacket. I hadn't seen it in 6 years. It was staring at me and it hit me that I don't hate my best friend or my mom or my dad or my wife. I hated myself. I was the liar. I was the cheater. I was the manipulator. I was the overseller. And that's when I took stock in myself. I started to look at these values that I wanted to live by, the ones my mom taught me, the name David Meltzer. I wanted to become the beloved servant again. And it took two more years until I lost everything. Thank goodness I asked for forgiveness from my wife, and she's so remarkable. She told me, look, I know you're going to make mistakes. I just need to know one thing, that every day you're going to do your best. If you do your best, I know the David Meltzer I married, nobody can stop the David Meltzer that does his best. So as long as I see you trying, we're going to be okay. And as things unraveled, because they happened very slowly, then all of a sudden, economically, and Mark will attest to this with compound interest is a good example. The bad decisions economically that you make, it happened very slowly and all of a sudden. And I ended up losing that over $100 million and having to tell my mom I lost her house and she would have to move, which is really ironic. God loves to laugh at you. Think about it. The only reason I wanted to be rich was to buy her a house. So he made sure that when I lost everything, I lost her house. He wanted to make sure that I was protected, promoted, loved, and perfected by this bankruptcy the way my mom told me. My mom wasn't even fazed when I told her that she had to move. I was. I'm the one that told her I don't believe in God. And she said, David, you believe in God, the wrong God. And I told her, why is God punishing me? She said, God doesn't punish you. He's protecting, promoting, and loving, and perfecting you. You'll see. Just keep doing what you're doing. Wasn't afraid of losing her house. This is the wisdom of the true great women in my life, the incredible Julie Meltzer, my wife, and my incredible mom, Karen, who passed away 6 months ago.
I remember sitting next to her at Rayo's and she was telling me the story of how she started a business, a multi-million dollar business from her garage. And we were in the car going home and I said, Mark, she is a rock star. Like it's, you know, like the David show, but there's like the Julie show. And I was so dialed into that channel. And I believe she had the ability to not say, you're a loser because you can no longer bring in the money, but you're losing who I fell in love with. And this is a conversation that Mark and I have all the time. I never wanted to be married again, and I never ever wanted to be divorced. I got married thinking you live happily ever after, and it wasn't happy for me. And I was financially secure, raising three kids on my own. And I fell in love with Mark for his core values. And we talk about all the time, if this all imploded tomorrow, we would build it again and then some. Because Mark, at the core, is a winner. And we talk about how sometimes we don't like the behavior in each other or our children, but we love the person. And I think that's what Julie said. You know, I love you dearly and I believe in you, but I'm leaving the behavior. And that's a really hard kick when you're already at rock bottom to make sure you get it. And now you get this kick from the person that you love unconditionally. And I know how you respect and value your marriage now. I don't know what happened during that dark time. We've all done things we are not proud of. It's called being mortal and human. And now you have, you're on the brink and working with Mark, empires, not just yours, not just Mark, but in this circle in which we all run, where we have to lead with the giving hand constantly. And Mark talks about a competition-free zone constantly. And that if David is succeeding, we're succeeding. And we never play if you win, I lose. It's the win-win game. It's why I love Mark Murphy the way that I do. He is like the win-win slogan. And when he said, I met David Meltzer, and out of all the people I met, I want him to coach you. I knew what kind of a human being you were from that statement. And I really want to talk about the power of the two of you. And I want to kind of take a seat in the background right now. I want to talk about how the two of you are really working day in and day out. You're putting on these events, you're helping people, coaching, training, speaking, working through finances to help elevate people emotionally, physically, financially, and spiritually. And I want to hear this dialogue. I get to sit at the dinner table with these men and Julie. I want all of you guys to hear this.
Well, I also get to sit at the dinner table, David. And I can hear this from Lisa, and then I have five kids who tell me I don't know anything. So, you know, it's good. I know nothing, and you know, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't even be in business. So I appreciate them keeping me humble. You know that I think the hard part, Lisa, with David is, when you always lead with your giving hand, and people get to see David in social media, they get to see some of the speeches he's given, the things he's done. I don't think they actually always know what he does, and how they can come to play. You know, meaning they say, "Oh, this is terrific," but it, you know, what can I do beyond social media? And I think, you know, that's why I always try to bring people to David, because I want to lead, you know, Muhammad to the mountain. You know, in terms of bringing those folks to any of those events. But I think some people, you know, sometimes when you'll mention David, they'll go, oh no, I love him. I watch the stuff he does. And I say, well, why don't you get the up close experience and actually change your life for the better? Does that come up, David? Is that something that people, don't really either know what you do and then how to get into Meltzer Room?
Yeah. It's crazy. How many people are exposed to you when you've built the enormous amount of content in this social silo over a decade with some of the biggest names in the space. And you have no idea the ripple effect of people that may have seen one video, 100 videos, or 1,000 videos. And even though in your mind you seem repetitive and honest, and that every single time you're like, text me, email me. We do free Wednesday trainings with the Napoleon Hill Institute, which I'm blessed to be the chairman of, or I've done for over 28 years, free Friday trainings. I have a group of thousands of people, a networking group where they get coaching and can ask me questions every Monday. And then, of course, you know, I have a wait list on my one-on-one clients, and I do business advisory and consulting. But the majority of the people, they don't hear it. And they are just along the way. You talked about your children and how we know nothing. I joke around when my son, who's 15, rolls his eyes at me. I now tell him, thank you. He said, what are you talking about, Dad? I said, thank you. I can see you acknowledge the lesson that I'm teaching, and I can see you planted it You planted that tree for the future that I may never see. But thank you for planting it. And someday some other person that you're not resistant to, like a Mark Murphy or Lisa Murphy, they'll water the same seed. And you'll tell me, oh my God, Lisa's a genius. She said, interested and interesting. Yeah, that was really smart. You're right. But I think to the context, I don't try to attach my emotions to these outcomes. I believe in divine direction. And Lisa talked about behaviors. And one of the things that attracts me to both of you so much is I am a behavioralist. I take inventory of my behaviors and I ask myself, are these behaviors aligned with where I want to be or better? Or are these behaviors interfering with where I want to be or better? And then I take it to the next level. In fact, my book that's coming out in Super Bowl is called Don't Do Business with Dicks. Not exactly on the spiritual realm of a title, but I've learned from writing 8 books that if you don't have a title that someone's going to grab the book and buy, you're hurting your cause if nobody reads your book because it's named Compassionate Capitalism. That was not flying off the shelves when people went by at the airport. But for some reason, they like this name, Don't Do Business with Dicks. But in the context of the book, it's behavioral in its nature. It says to me, I love the behaviors of Mark and Lisa Murphy. I've witnessed it. I've watched it from close up and afar, and their behaviors are aligned with where I want to be or better. These are people that will accelerate what I'm doing, aggregate what I'm doing, and together we'll have this exponential outcome, this compounding of interest of behaviors of good deeds and selfless deeds that we are pouring into a community of people that want to help each other and know people that will help each other. You know what a compliment it is to me when we do some of our VIP dinners together and there's young entrepreneurs, very successful young entrepreneurs, and they tell me, Mr. Meltzer, I can't believe I'm in the room with you and the Murphys. I can't believe I'm here with you in this room. And I said, of course you are. That's why you're in this room. Because the fastest way to get to where you want to be is find people that are already there and ask them for directions. And the fastest way we get to where we want to be is to find people that we can help to get to where they want to be. And that's what you two do, Mark. That's what you and I spend all day long doing. And so, yeah, I will offer myself in proximity. You can please reach out to me. I actually, for your community, anybody that wants my book for free, I will sign it, send it to them, pay for shipping, and my book is a first step. Just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. I will pay for everything to start the process of alignment in behaviors if you want to live in a divine direction of protection, promotion, love, and perfection.
Well, thank you that first. That's very kind of you. I was thinking the exact opposite. I was thinking, should I buy 500 books or 1,000 books? I hadn't figured out what was the right number, you know, and write as many reviews as we can too.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mark, I think you talk about cash confidence all the time in what you do. And David, you talk about the emotional confidence. And you talked about 2 very important things right now. You mentioned not everybody is always able to receive. And for the giver, that doesn't feel great. You know, we all need to be able to receive. And I want you to touch on that and what that really means. And we talked about this at the last VIP dinner. And Mark and I talked about this the whole way home. We're givers. And even a compliment, you know, I'll say, oh, I got it on sale. Or no, and I realize how I deflect. And we talked a lot about being able to receive. And the other thing is worthiness. For people to come in a room and say, I can't believe I'm in a room with whoever would be in the room at that time. What do you think causes someone? What is that point in life that makes me say, hey, I'm worthy to be here. I deserve this. I deserve abundance. The world cannot survive with just a pool of poor people, poor in spirit, poor in finances, poor. We need to be rich in a lot of ways. And unless I feel worthy, how do I ever become a better version of who I am right now?
What a great question. And they're both questions intertwined with one another. Worthiness and receiving, believe it or not, carry a very similar energy and are relatives of each other. There's an important paradigm shift that we have to make as human beings. And the earlier I can empower people to make this shift, and there's two characteristics or qualities in this shift. One is the humility of asking for help, which creates wisdom. And so in the paradigm shift, we need number one, wisdom of people who have already paid the dummy tax, people like Mark and I especially. We are definitely people who have spent a lot of money paying dummy tax so other people don't have to. But then there's also faith. And my faith is simple for everyone because I support everyone in the God that they pray to or don't pray to. I encourage you, but I do believe that you must believe in something bigger than you that loves you, protects you, promotes you, and perfects you more than your mom. And so this paradigm shift that I talk about, when you have wisdom and faith and you seek with wisdom and faith, it makes you worthy because you start your day and you say, I am happy. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it becomes your objective of your daily habits. I have shifted. I'm not trying to go get more happiness or more health or more wealth. Those already exist because I am part of a unified, abundant system of thought that has more than enough of everything for everyone, more than enough wealth and health and wisdom. It has more than enough worthiness. I just interfere with it. And if I shift my paradigm, my perspective each day, was that behavior interfering with who I am, my potential? Or is it aligned in the divine direction to where I want to be or better? You see, most of life, the daily evidence is not aligned with where we think we want to be because we're not capable. We're not infinite. And so there's usually evidence all day long that says you're never going to get there, or the evidence is contrary to where we want to be or better. And so when I see the evidence of today, I don't care if it's aligned with my divine direction because I have faith and I also seek wisdom for people to tell me, I know it doesn't seem like it, Dave, but you're exactly where you're supposed to be at the right time, at the right place. You continue to save your money in this way, it will grow. It will grow exponentially. If you continue to do good deeds, it will grow exponentially. You will get to where you want to be, even though there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where you want to be. But you must utilize wisdom and faith to shorten the distance of resistance. And when we do that, we not only understand how important it is to receive, but we feel worthy of receiving. They both go hand in hand. And my biggest transformation of receiving, because I was like you, Lisa, especially, it was all about giving. I felt terrible, guilty. I my mom was the worst at it. And at least I didn't need anything. She needed things and would reject people from helping her. But when I realized this, human beings feel at their highest self, closest to their God, when they're able and capable of helping other people. This is when we feel this is why we love to give. I give to you, I feel great. I'm able and capable. When you guys took me to Rayo's, I had some guilt. I'm like, oh God, this place, like there's only six seats here and it's expensive. And I'm not worthy of receiving this. You know, we became new friends. And then I said to myself, no, you know what? This is my gift to the Murphys, because they're able and capable of giving me a once-in-a-life experience at that restaurant. And it was. And then I felt so good about receiving it. I feel I could never let someone else pick up a check. And I bet you Mark Murphy was the same way before. There's no way you could go to dinner with him and he would not pick up the check. Because now I've had to learn. Thank you so much, because I want you to feel at your highest self, closest to God. And so that's where the infinite loop of being given more, receiving more, and asking for more than more, that creates the ability to serve from my saucer.
Do you gentlemen think it's our age group? And we were raised by parents who had it a lot harder than we have it. And there was this feeling of being proud. And I remember when my dad died and we were like this close to losing the house, and somebody offered my mother, when we could have used that money, $10,000, and she refused it. And we were desperate. And she said, I won't take it, but thank you. And this was a woman who, it would be, you know, me giving the kids $10 to go get ice cream. $10,000 was not a lot. It was everything to us. And she kind of instilled in us that there is kind of something wrong with you if you allow others to give. And I think we have to kind of undo that. And then Mark and I talk about this all the time. And then we became the go-givers to the generation, you know, our future generation, to a fault, because we are the ones on this tightrope trying to figure out the balance of giving and receiving. Do you feel, and you coach all ages, David, in all companies of all sizes, do you experience that with the sandwich generation?
For sure. And I've had similar experiences with my mom. I remember when someone offered her a car, as she had, I think, four drivers at a time and no car, and she turned it down. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I'll say yes. It all falls within this context in this go-giving society. But by the way, Napoleon Hill, I know Bill Berg, and he's been on my podcast, who wrote the Go-Giving series. It's actually Napoleon Hill that created that philosophy in Outwitting the Devil. And he talks about being a go-giver in that book in 1937. So this Depression generation who built up their careers from nothing. My grandfather sold tires out of the back of a truck when he was like 17 and came through Ellis Island and built his own auto parts store and retired the day he turned 65, but he would never receive anything. And I think that guilt, that resentment, that lack of worthiness comes from an interesting duality that most people live their life, I will be happy when. I'll be happy when I send my kids to graduate school. I'll be happy when I retire. I'll be happy when I make this much money. When you live in a realm of for the sake of what, it gives receiving a different energy. So when people offer me things and I say, I'm going to receive this for the sake of helping other people, I'm going to receive this for the sake of letting them feel capable and able of helping me, I'm going to, for the sake of, and if you can make that different decision in your head. And I do this, like you said, with billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and entertainers. That's who I've been blessed to be able to empower in this mission of mine to empower over a billion people like you two. And so for me, if I can shift it to ask yourself for the sake of what, and if it's aligned with your divine direction, then receive, then give, then ask for more. But do not attach your emotions to some false facade that you're going to be happy when, because I promise you, when will never come, because there's always more, and there'll be more than enough for everyone, for everything.
And one of the things about worthiness that was there is when I was, one of the things I'm least proud of when I was a young financial advisor was that I have people that were in great deals of debt, and I'd come in and clean up their debt, and I'd double or triple their income. And then I'd come back a year or two later, and they were like in 10x the problems they had before. And it was like giving an alcoholic a gallon of vodka or a drug addict a, you know, an 8-ball of cocaine. And the idea is because they had bad values around money. And then I realized until I could change their values around money, they were never going to be successful. And that, so it always started like everybody, like success is a choice to me. And you know, everybody wants to win and be successful and all those things, but not everybody's willing to have the discipline or be able to prepare. And so that became very clear. And so I can't, you know, whether it be an athlete or somebody that's in financial distress, I've got to change their mindset first. But then that expanded every place in life, you know, where people say to me, you know, I'd like to find a great boyfriend or a girlfriend or a husband or a wife or something. And they're putting themselves in a position that they have almost no chance of of that right person showing up because they've not done the work of preparing themselves. And I think it's in every area to get them to, you know, other things, to something as pedantic as being in the right room, that believing you deserve to be there, that you have to start with that first. And sometimes it's easy to do and sometimes it's very difficult, but it has to be done or you're not going to have any success. I would also say one thing, because we're going to run short on time. I know the chairman of the Napoleon Hill organization. I think many people have read his famous book. Tell us a little bit about the organization. I think a lot of us know about the book, but tell us about the organization and what it's doing and let people understand what's there.
So I made a conscious decision to join a community that had a legacy already. When I saw my mentors like Dr. Wayne Dyer, Bob Proctor, be able, when they passed, they weren't able to carry their content forward. So I wanted to create an umbrella of something that I knew already was a legacy. And the seminal leader in personal and professional development was a man named Napoleon Hill. He wrote a book called Think and Grow Rich, sold over 500 million copies of it. And Napoleon Hill was the first one. Even Ford and Carnegie, all those guys learned from Napoleon Hill. All the famous thought leaders today will credit Napoleon Hill, basically what we believe we can achieve. And he had many principles around finance, education, religion, all types of different things in his book to help people have this discipline that you're talking about, which I call the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential and a definiteness of purpose. That's what he teaches. And so I became and invested in the Napoleon Hill Institute, which is a for-profit institute to amplify the content of Napoleon Hill into modern-day platforms, digital institutes around the world to certify. So we are now launching January 1st. We'll have certified financial, Napoleon Hill financial planners. We'll have certified Napoleon Hill podcasters. But they will go through a training of Think and Grow Rich, Outwitting the Devil, The Laws of Success, to empower them, to empower others with the philosophies and strategies that have proven over time, over 100 years, to be a great way to be successful. And it changed my life. There's so many entrepreneurs and business people, executives, who will tell you Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill, changed their life. So I am the chairman of the Institute. We have structured it so that we have longevity in a format where kids today they're not going to buy the leather-bound book. They're not going to carry around with tons of sticky notes like you see the old men carrying around still today. But they're going to watch the videos. They're going to see it on Instagram and LinkedIn. They're going to have digital YouTube training courses because we want to plant the seeds under trees that we may never sit under. And I believe that I can bring all of those greats into the Institute that also were aligned with Napoleon Hill. My own content, Bob Proctor, Wayne Dyer, just to name a few, Damon John. We have tons of people that want to put their content into the Institute. And we donate the money to the foundation, which gives scholarships to kids so that they can create and amplify what we're doing.
And how does somebody, we're going to link all of your information, David, so that people can get in touch with you. But I know that we have made a contribution. What are the different ways in which people can contribute, whether it's financially or in other ways?
Oh, we would love, the biggest thing is, beyond finance, is to reach out to us and learn about the content that we have, the free content, the master certification, the online certification, support us by buying the book and reading it in whatever form. The audiobook's amazing. I would suggest Outwitting the Devil is my favorite audiobook that I listen to again and again. It's better than Think and Grow Rich for me. So there's so much content. Reach out to the NapoleonHillInstitute.com, NHI.com. You could email me directly. If you're interested in being a certified coach, we'd love to have you, or just be certified yourself in being educated with the philosophies. The mindset, heartset, and handset of Napoleon Hill will change your life. It has changed literally millions and millions of people's lives already.
I just want to thank you, David, so much for, number one, your friendship. Number two, for allowing Mark to give and receive at that dinner, because I received your friendship and really another strong, powerful woman who is in front and center. And I asked Mark, I was blown away and so incredibly inspired by what she was doing as really a hobby and just her entrepreneurial mind and the mom and the parents, the two of you are. And that was, it's like lives inside me. I feel like Julie and I just love each other from afar. We don't need to talk every day. But had you not been able to let someone else pick up a check, I would have been denied that experience. And it comes full circle. And I think what a perfect way, especially going into such a beautiful season and just giving, and a perfect way to really not end, but say ciao for now until we meet again. And we can talk about the success of your book launch. I know we can pre-order right now. I'll let you guys share the title. I think I'm more comfortable with you saying it than me. My mother still watches the show, you know. it's incredible to watch what's happening. I think for those of you that don't know what the VIP dinners are, you're missing out. They are game changers for every person there. There are these huge networking events with people from all walks of life. You'll have panels of speakers from the most successful people to people who have failed forward and gotten through some tough times. Some of your coaches, some incredible entrepreneurs, celebrities. And how do they find all that information for you? Yeah. David, I don't know anybody who works more than Mark. I say to him, like, Mark, do the two of you like bump into each other all the time in the airports? Because you're always like all over the place.
It's so nice to hear when they talk about Mark. They'll either say, yeah, he's just like you. He knows everybody and he never stops and he stops giving. So, you know, in my culture, they have a word that defines Mark Murphy, and it's called a mensch.
Right, but it takes two to know two. You know,
he's a triple M, Mark Murphy the mensch. So I only have two M's. So I am so grateful. Look, everybody can reach me. You can Google me. I'm on every platform, David Meltzer. Email me david@dmeltzer.com. And you know, I do have if you want to be invited, we do 200 different events a year. And so if you want to be invited or informed, I do have a text community, which we can post 949-298-2905. So if you'd like to be informed and invited to everything and you won't be annoyed with 200 text messages a year, that's the best way. But if not, just email me and be proactive. We'll be in your city, I'm sure.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Once again, I am Lisa D. Murphy, and we want to thank you for joining.